Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No! It's the Flight Free Podcast. One presenter. One special guest. One mission to save planet Earth. Will they succeed? Find out in this thrilling episode of the Flight Free Podcast.
Hi everyone and welcome to the Flight Free Podcast. I'm Anna, the director of Flight Free UK, and you are listening to the February episode of our new podcast series, which is called In Conversation With. Every month we invite someone to speak to us who we find particularly inspiring. And this month we are going to be talking to Helen Coffey. Now Helen is the head of travel at The Independent. She is also an author, so her first book was published last year called Zero Altitude, How I Learned to Fly Less and Travel More. And Helen has taken our pledge since we started, which is amazing. So thank you, Helen, for joining us. And hi, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me.
So, Helen, you are someone who travels for a living. And I think that taking the Flight Free pledge is a really radical move. So yeah, really excited to have this conversation with you today. So would you like to introduce yourself to the listeners and tell everybody what you do?
Yes. So as mentioned, I'm head of travel at The Independent. So look after all the travel section, features, news stories, all of that kind of business. And I'm obviously a very keen traveller myself, but since 2020 I've taken the Flight Free pledge, inspired by you, Anna, and have just signed up again for 2023 as well. So yeah.
Oh, amazing. That's such great news. What brought you into this world? Did you fall into it, or did you always want to be someone who kind of saw the world? And why does travel excite you?
Yeah, I wish I could say I'd always wanted to be a travel writer, because I think that is what people expect. It's one of those sort of dream job scenarios. Every time you tell people what you do, they're like, oh my gosh, how did you manage that? And I mean, not to sound bitter about it, but it's not as glamorous as people think it is. But no, it's funny. One of those things where life takes you down twists and turns. I knew I wanted to write for a living because that's what I love to do. I'm retrained as a journalist when I was in my kind of mid-20s, and then had a variety of interesting jobs, you know, writing about business. I know nothing about business. Then got a job on a ski and snowboard magazine, so sub-editing their mag, because I did love skiing and knew a bit about skiing. And then started a job at the Telegraph writing about skiing, and just kind of carried on in that vein. And then got to a point where I thought, well, you know, as much as I like skiing, it's quite a niche, limited subject area to write about chairlifts for a living. I think there's more. I want to open myself up to more. The natural thing is to kind of explore more of travel. But it was very new to me, other than being a person that liked going on holiday, as most of us do. But it's sort of, the more I've done it, the more I think it encapsulates so many things. Obviously, it's different cultures, it's seeing new places. It's why I think the pledge is great, because it's giving you an alternative way to travel. Because I do still think it's really important that we leave our little island and go and see other places and talk to other people. Because I think there is a real link between being open-minded and being tolerant and, you know, accepting diversity in different kinds of people. I think that really goes hand in hand with actually going to other places. And I think just saying, oh well, we should never travel at all, I mean we're already always at risk of becoming more and more insular, and we've seen that with Brexit and various other things. And actually I think it's as important as it ever was, but we do just need to reframe how we think about it, the way that we do it. And in fact, a lot of the kind of tourism models that have prevailed over the last 100 years do need to change, because, you know, not just flying, but dropping into places, not really seeing things, not really talking to anyone, you know, in a little bubble of a resort and then going home again. And we should start to think about it differently, for sure, I reckon.
So you were on our podcast back in 2020 when travel had ended. So that was the first year that we'd run our pledge. And of course, that COVID came along and completely messed everything up. So the flight-free year that everybody had wasn't quite as expected. So what was 2020 like for you, as having taken this incredible pledge that was a massive challenge for you and then finding out that you couldn't really do anything?
I think, well, like for lots of people, just massively damp squib of a year in terms of anything exciting happening other than, you know, obviously huge tragedy in so many people getting ill. It was just, I think it was a horrible year for everyone. But just in terms of travel, as you said, really geared up to do all these amazing trips by train, by ferry, everything else. I was going to do a column about it for The Independent, was feeling really fired up about it. And then it just kind of went and crashed and burned. And I managed to get in sort of one trip, I think, before everything locked down, and then one trip in one of those phases where it was kind of tentatively open back up to European travel, but with lots of caveats and testing. And then when I got back, I had to quarantine for 2 weeks, which was one of the low lights of 2020, really. So, because we were in, at the time, I was living in this kind of one bedroom flat, no balcony, no outdoor space. And I was just kind of at the window, pouring at it like a dog in a car. Yeah, it wasn't the one, was it? I think for any of us.
But yet you stuck with it and signed up again.
Yeah, it's funny because obviously that first year, I always say it felt like a cheat year because everyone I told that I was doing it was like, oh, well, I'm flight free as well, because obviously they hadn't gone anywhere, but it wasn't intentional for them. So I was like, well, I definitely have to do it for 2021. And then 2021 was a bit of a weird year for travel as well, like with traffic light systems and all kinds of things. And then 2022, I said, right, I'll do it again, because I think this year's broadly speaking going to be a bit more normal. And it was the first year that we got this mass opening up of travel again, without testing, without in the end needing any paperwork. And yeah, funnily enough, by the time you've done it 3 years in a row, what do you know, your habits have changed. And lots of people this year were like, oh, I sort of thought you'd done that now, as if it was something to tick off a list that, you know, check, had a couple of years without flying, that was interesting, on we go back onto a plane. And I said, well, no, because now A, I've discovered more about how bad flying is, and then B, I've now experienced how, I don't want to say how easy it is, but how much more rewarding it is to travel without flying, because I really do think the kind of experiences you have and the delight you feel in swapping horrible jumping in a tin can, getting thrown across the world, wherever, with the marvels of slow travel, I just think it's much more enjoyable. And so for me, that's been the biggest change.
You have just described exactly what our model of behaviour change is. And I kind of feel like saying, ha ha, we've got you.
Yeah, you did. You did it.
Because it is a case of just trying something. And as you said, the perception is, oh, isn't that over now? You know, I thought you'd done your flight free thing. But actually trying it and being immersed in that life, it changes your expectations, doesn't it? And changes your outlook and changes the reality of travel. And that's the whole idea behind asking people to take a year off flying. We're not saying you have to give up flying forever. We're just saying, could you try it? And if you do try it, could that then change your outlook and give you a bit of an insight into alternative ways of travel and the benefits of staying grounded? And it sounds as though that's really happened with you, which is fantastic. And you're a great case study, Helen.
You can wheel me out anytime you like.
I feel we should rewind a little bit, because one of the big arguments that we get confronted with or presented with, what about tourism, and mainly what you said about experiencing other cultures and exploring and being sympathetic with people from different countries and everything else. So something that we're very keen on showing is that not flying doesn't mean not travelling. So something we've tried to do more this year is to focus on that alternative travel side. So we've got a new page on our website called How To, and we've got some new kind of help articles of how to travel by train, how to travel by electric car, how to travel by coach. and then some ideas, so some destination ideas and links to the people who can really help. So we've got links to the man in seat 61, which I'm sure many of the listeners are already familiar with. If you're not, definitely check him out. That's seat61.com. It's an incredible resource. And then sharing people's stories of where they have traveled and how they got there and why they went there and why they chose not to fly. And that hopefully gives our campaign a real personal face and helps people to see, oh yeah, maybe I could do that. And that leads us to talking about your particular travels, Helen, because you, barring 2020, which as you've said, it was a bit of a damp squib, even though you did manage to get away a few times. And just to interject here, the podcast that you recorded for us in 2020 was about finding genuine travel experiences in the UK and like looking upon things with new eyes. So if anyone hasn't listened to that episode, I recommend you scroll back down through our podcast page back to 2020. I think it was called At Home Travel or Stay At Home Travel or something like that. So, but yes, the trips that you have managed to go on, there's been quite a lot, haven't there, since you took the Flight Free pledge?
Yeah. I was even just thinking back to this year because I was writing a column about why I was taking the pledge again. And I was like, oh, I didn't think I'd got away that much this year. And actually, I was looking at this list and thought, no, that's pretty decent. So there's just been loads of different options and ways to travel that I've tried that's been really exciting. So the furthest I've managed to go was to Morocco, which normally is a bit more straightforward because you would go via Spain. Basically, you'd get quite a quick ferry from the bottom of Spain. It takes about 90 minutes. But because it was still very strange COVID times, they had completely shut the sea border between Spain and Morocco, probably more to do with political reasons and migrants and all of that. But anyway, it meant you had to go via France instead. So got the train down to Marseille and then got this ferry that took more like 48 hours rather than 90 minutes. I really enjoyed it, but it was really eye-opening experience. I mean, A, because it feels like a dream now, but the amount of paperwork needed because of the pandemic restrictions at that time was like staggering and really worrying. Like I thought they were going to stop me and say, no, you haven't got this one thing that you need. I had a folder with about 10 files in it, like that I just kind of passed over. And then equally to come back needed a negative COVID test to get on the ferry. And that was like a very, very stressful day waiting for the result, thinking, if it is positive, I have no idea what I'm going to do. Like I would just be stuck here. And you didn't, at that time, you didn't need it for the flight, for a plane ride. You only needed it for the ferry, which really irked me because I felt discriminated against. But sorry, that's the boring bit. The good bit was this trip was, it was amazing. Like getting there by ferry made it even more exciting because it felt like such a kind of, I'm sure you've had this a lot, Anna, when you like pull in after a long train or boat ride, you kind of feel this like, I made it, like this is incredible, like part of me never thought I'd get there, and then you're suddenly pulling into this port in this new country and new continent for me. I'd actually never been to the continent of Africa, so I was like, this is just wild. Yeah, I had a few days in Tangier and then Fez and Rabat before I went home, so it was kind of this 10-day trip. It was amazing. And what other, yeah, got a lot of kind of European trips by train, but also by ferry. So I've taken the ferry to the Hook of Holland to get to Amsterdam. I've taken the ferry from Portsmouth to Santander and to Bilbao in Spain as well now, and then explored more of Spain by coach and by train. Yeah, it turns trips into adventures. That would be my main takeaway, actually.
And have you done any of the night trains?
Yeah, so actually one of my most recent trips at the end of last year, I'd really, really wanted to get, there was like a new sleeper train from Paris to Vienna, which I've been desperate to try. So yeah, I did that in December and it was really cool actually, because it means you can get an afternoon Eurostar into Paris, really quick change to the Gare de l'Est, and then you're going overnight and you wake up in Vienna at sort of 10 in the morning. So it just takes out a lot of the time because you're sleeping. So that's dead time anyway. So really, it to me, that then feels equivalent to flying in terms of speed, because in terms of a usable bit of your day, you'd take, you know, an hour or so to get to the airport, depending on where your nearest airport is. You'd have a couple of hours at the airport, provided the flight's on time. You've then got the hour or more to get to the destination. Then maybe you've got to wait for your bag. Then you've got to get into the city. So I actually think, you know, depending on where you're going, if there is a sleeper train, it can often work out feeling quicker, I think, than taking a plane, which is a big selling point to people whose argument is, oh, I'm really time poor. It's like, that doesn't have to be the obstacle that you think it is, actually.
And overall, how does this compare to flying? Is it more travelling? Have you done less? Obviously, it's been different. But yeah, overall, kind of your life as a travel writer over the course of a year, what do you reckon? What's the comparison?
So I think I'd say I take fewer trips, but the ones I take are more intentional, which is a good thing. Because one of the reasons I originally took the pledge is that I calculated in the first half of 2019, I was doing so many trips, because you get invited. It's a very lucky position to be in. You get invited on lots of what we call press trips, where it's being organised by maybe the tourist board or maybe a chain of hotels or somebody else. And they're essentially laying on this trip for you. You don't pay. You don't organise anything. And so it's really easy to just say, yes. As long as I'm free on those dates, I'll go. And I had taken 26 flights in 6 months in that year, which is the equivalent of one a week, pretty much. And so I felt this, and I hadn't calculated it before that or thought about it. I just said yes to all these things. Sometimes I didn't even want to go on them, to be honest. That's, I think, what is so distressing. Like, there was one time where I'd already planned my own holiday to Italy. So I was going to Rome and then Venice. I was really excited about that. And then an editor said, I'd said yes to going to Russia, to Moscow, to this hotel, and now I can't go, but I feel really bad. Can you just squeeze it in? And it meant, honestly, flying out to Moscow, being there for literally 2 days. I'd never been to Russia before. It now to me feels like such a waste, because I went, sort of saw this ridiculous bling hotel that had obviously paid thousands of pounds to get journalists from all over Europe there just to review it, and then got a flight back to the UK. I think my ex-boyfriend actually might have had to meet me at the airport. It was something crazy, and we went straight on to Italy. And I thought, this isn't fun. This isn't what travel should be. It shouldn't be this kind of trip to trip to trip, no consideration, no mindfulness to it, no appreciation when you're there. I'd stopped appreciating it, and that's a desperately sad thing to admit. And the difference now is that I'm not going away as much, but I really plan my trips. Like I was saying with the Vienna sleeper, it's something I'd heard about, really wanted to do. It took months to figure out when I could do it, working with the tourist board, could I come now, sorting out the train travel. And then actually, when you get to do it, it's exciting. It's not just, oh, another trip that I have to go on for my job. You know, woe is me. My diamond shoes are too tight, you know.
So let's talk about your book, Zero Altitude. So this was all part of your whole kind of, I'm going to do the flight free challenge and I'm going to write a book about it, and then I'm going to go back to my old life, in inverted commas. But, well, let's just talk about the book. I love it, by the way. And also, I want to tell the listeners that you're a damn good writer, and I feel like everybody should look up all of your columns and everything that you're doing at The Independent at the moment. I think it's really great. So yes, definitely click on Helen Coffey's name when you're on The Independent website. But yeah, your book, it brings together travel writing and stories, but also the research that you did into why we should be reducing the amount we fly. So can you tell us a bit more about it?
Yeah, so I really wanted it to be this, it's quite, I suppose, a bit unusual, really, the combination of more travel loggy about the trips I did and being very honest about how those were, and alongside, as you say, this research. Because for me, I hadn't seen anything that gathered it all together in one place. And I think for lots of people, they knew, and this includes me, they knew vaguely, oh, well, flying's quite a lot of carbon emissions, isn't it? But, you know, it's very complicated, and actually it's probably all right. It's not as bad as they say, or, you know, there's offsetting and there's all this new technology that's coming along. So actually it's going to be fine. I think that's where I was at beforehand. And then in the course of doing the research and talking to people like you, Anna, and then lots of climate change scientists and experts, as well as activists and researchers, behaviour change researchers, all these different fascinating people who have spent a lifetime learning about this stuff, I, at the end of it, thought, oh, it's not actually very complicated at all. In terms of, do we need to fly less? The answer was just yes. Like there wasn't really any argument from anyone about that. It was like, well, these are the hard facts. We're trying to get down to net zero. We have to get down to net zero if we're going to stick within the Paris Agreement's aims of keeping global warming to below 2 degrees higher than industrial levels. 1.5 would be better, but 2 degrees will set that as the upper limit. If we're going to do that, we need to be at net zero. Now, there's no way in the time frame that we set, which is kind of arbitrary, but people need to have a goal. So there's this whole kind of, by 2050, we need to have achieved this net zero society thing. Flying at the levels it is cannot be part of that because of the amount of emissions that it causes. And there are, you know, it's not just carbon emissions, there are other harmful chemicals as well that increase the warming effect of flights, and fuel burn at altitude is much worse than on the ground. And there's no magic solution to that. It's not like being able to say, oh, you can switch to electric car or whatever else. Even the technology that exists is so far off being done at any kind of scale. And that's the problem. It's all about scaling up. So there are solutions, but they're no match for the number of flights we had in 2019. I saw the other day, we're already back up to, I think it was more than 3/4 of where we were at in 2019 in terms of levels of flights. And that's, the pandemic's barely finished and we're back. So that tells you how quickly we're going to, next year, I think we'll have a complete return, if not more than 2019 levels. And there's no talk from really any politicians about reducing the number of flights. And that's, I think that's what's really worrying for me, is that clearly there need to be fewer planes taking off every year until we get to 2050. And instead the opposite is going to happen. We're going to have more and more and more. So I got to the end of it and I thought, I've looked into all the alternatives and the offsetting stuff, but the only answer is fewer flights, that's it.
Yeah, and it's frustrating, isn't it, that the people who can do something about this, the politicians and industry, they're just carrying on as normal. And first of all, not telling us how it is. And secondly, not doing what needs to be done in order to bring aviation levels down. So there are so many things that can happen to reduce demand for aviation, and that is fair pricing. So there's no tax on aviation fuel. We could tax the fuel and use the money to subsidize rail travel more. It is simply information. You know, if everybody had the information that you've just said, if it was communicated more clearly, then more people would make different choices. You are in a really good position because you do have a platform of people who are interested in travel. And so you are in a great position to be able to be spreading that message, because we can't rely on government or industry to do it. So we kind of have to do it, don't we? And yeah, that's, again, one of the things I think is most brilliant about you, Helen. And thank you for not shying away from this. And the fact that you've taken the pledge again for the third year is so brilliant. And the message that sends is really powerful, really important, and hopefully will inspire lots of other people to do the same. So thank you so much for being involved. I want to finish by just asking you, overall, we sort of hinted at it back at the beginning about how your outlook has changed. So can you go into that a little bit more? How has your outlook changed from when you first heard about the campaign to now?
I think, yeah, I think you mentioned this earlier, I had this idea in my head, and like lots of people have asked me since, that it would be a 1 year kind of quirky New Year's resolution for a travel editor to take. And I'll be perfectly honest, because journalists are horrible, we're always looking for the angle, what's going to give me some good copy. And that was really one of the main factors that propelled it. First of all, I thought, well, there'll be loads to write about, it'll be interesting take. And it's just funny how you can start off something with one reason and then it just works away at you, kind of at your heart, really. And I just feel almost like a completely different person to when I started, because I really didn't think it would be longer than a year. And now I still won't say I'm never going to get on a plane, mainly because depending on what kind of person you are, psychologically for me, that doesn't help me. That kind of makes things harder. But I think it's very, very unlikely that will ever be a regular feature of my life again. It will be maybe once every, 5 years, and only if I couldn't get there by train, and I'll really have to think about it. But the main outlook change for me has been the enjoyability of slow travel, which, Anna, you know so well and talk about so well. But once you've experienced it, it's a game changer. It's like, I don't know why I'd want to get a flight again when I know how much I now love trains, really love ferries in a way I wasn't expecting. Like, I love being at sea. I think in another life, maybe I was a porpoise. I don't know. Just the kind of the joy of being immersed in the landscape as you travel and making that as much part of a trip as where you're going, and that really being more than a cliche of it's about the journey, not just the destination, but suddenly realizing how true that is and how lovely that can be. I just don't think I want to stop now. I think I'm a bit of a slow travel addict. So that has been the most surprising turn of events, but I thank you for kind of introducing me to it all and changing my life for the better, really.
Oh, well, thank you. And do you have any trips for this year planned, or what are your big travel plans for 2023?
So I haven't got loads in the diary at the moment, but my friend is getting married in Spain near Cadiz in May. So I've got to plan a cheeky little trip by train down there. So I might make that a bit of a longer one, maybe do some more exploring, because Spain, although it's very close by plane, takes a little bit more when you're doing it by train. So it's, I think, always worth building in kind of a few more places along the way to make it more enjoyable. And I've also seen another new sleeper train. Whenever I see a new sleeper train, I get very excited, as I'm sure lots of people listening do. And you've probably all seen, if you're keen on this kind of thing, there's a new one from Brussels to Berlin starting in May. So I'm very keen to do that, because obviously you can get a very easy Eurostar to Brussels and then boom, overnight, you're in Berlin. Somehow I've never been to Berlin before. So this, to me, is like number one on my list for this year. And then I really, really want to, I was supposed to in 2020 take a cargo ship, which never happened, obviously, because of COVID. And then they just kept cancelling them. And I think they're still not doing the transatlantic route, which was what I was going to do. But they have said, they've got a deposit of mine, and they've said, we are opening up some other ones. Do any of these appeal? So I think I might just go for it, and whatever's available, just say, put me down for that, because I've always wanted to travel by cargo ship. I want to realise my dream.
Oh, amazing. Okay, well, that's pretty much it. So thank you so much, Helen, for coming along and telling us your stories. It's so inspiring to hear about your experiences. And I'm sure that you will inspire and have inspired lots of other people to take our Flight Free Challenge as well. And if that's you, dear listener, if you are inspired to take the challenge, you can do so at our website, which is flightfree.co.uk. If you want to hear more from Helen, she's at Lenny Coffey on Twitter. And of course, you can find her at The Independent. So thanks for listening. Thank you for joining us. Please join us again next month when we'll be having another inspiring conversation. And until then, stay safe and stay grounded.
This podcast was brought to you by the team at Flight Free UK. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to join the Flight Free Challenge for 2023. All you need to know for your challenge is at flightfree.co.uk. The Flight Free Podcast will return!